You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to my guest, Emily Paulson, and we talk about a lifestyle decision that she made about her very own adulting path and what changed when she went public with this news. Right now, at least a few people's ears are all perked up and thinking, ooh, what decision did she make? What is this? Oh my. Emily decided not to have kids. That's the decision she made. How she made this decision, how she went public with this decision for herself, and then the ripple effect of that in her life is what we talk about. It's a great conversation. You're going to love it. So let's get to it. Welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. Emily Paulson, are you ready for a fun chat today?
I am thrilled to be here. Cannot wait.
Yay! I start with the same question every single conversation. What part of the world do you call home?
I'm in Chicago, Illinois. So there's 13 inches of snow on the ground right now. So
really?
I'm in a winter. Yes. Yeah. I'm in a winter wonderland here in Chicago.
All right. So I'm going to ask you about winter activities and then I'll share my latest snow escapades. All right. So random warm-up question. What is your favorite outdoor winter activity?
This is the most boring and non-athletic answer. It's walking. And
okay.
I think I've just conditioned myself. Like, I walk in the city. I don't have a car. So I have, whether there's 13 inches of snow or not, I have to walk to go to the grocery, to go to the gym, to do whatever. So I've decided that I love it. I embrace it. And, you know, the brisk air in your face, it probably does something for our health. So that's
my
choice.
Let's go with that. Let's go. I don't have any data to back that up, but I agree. So I just got back from a family trip. I live in the tropics. I live in South Florida, but I just got back from dragging my kids and all of my adult kids and all of the luggage chasing snow in the Pacific Northwest. We thought we'd get to ski, but we did not. No, I've never prayed for snow so hard. Like, I'm not a deeply religious person. So like, I'm talking about like just, you know, wishing snow dancing. Like I was a five-year-old, not a five-year-old, however old you are when you want a school day, a snow day from school. I was like, please snow, please. No snow. No snow, no skiing.
So
when you said 13 inches, I was like, why Mother Nature? Why in Chicago and not where I was? All right. So enough ranting about the weather. 13 inches feels like a lot. Gotta say, okay, not talking about snow. That's not the topic, even though I'm having trouble staying off that topic. What we're going to talk about today is you going public with your lifestyle choice to be child-free. And I think this is going to be a fun conversation because I have a bunch of kids and stepkids and I love them. I really do. When they listen to this show, it's a reminder. I do love you, but I have been openly envious of many of my child-free friends over the past 2.5 decades, I will admit. So I'm excited to talk to you about this today. Are you ready to talk about it?
Yes. I love this topic.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so good about this. All right. Let's start here. As you probably know, this is actually a trending topic in mainstream news at the moment because people speculate that there is a decline of this on the rise. Is this something that you research and you like stay on top of as like a person, or is it mostly just something where you're like, this is my experience and this is where I weigh in on it?
It's a little bit of both. I speak from my experience and really I try to think about the child-free perspective. I feel like that is what is largely underrepresented in pop culture, cultural conversations, really on everything from like celebrity gossip all the way to serious healthcare. Like, what is happening with child-free people? How are we different? How are we living life different? How do we need things to be resourced for us in a different way? That's what I think about and probably talk to people most about. But yes, there are statistics now. We have data that more women specifically, and then of course there's an equal and opposite side to that equation with men.
Right.
More people are deciding to be child-free. More Gen Z people are on the fence about whether or not they want to be child-free. That's happening in the US. It's also happening in some other countries around the world, in Scandinavia. There's new reporting out of the UK. And I'm not an economist, but I am fascinated. Like, this conversation gets deep really quickly when we talk about what is the impact on the GDP and what does this look like
Yeah.
for the educational system of the future. And you can get really tactical or really philosophical with it. And I don't claim to be an expert in any of those fields, but it signals to me that there is a voice here, there's a movement here, there's something shifting culturally. And as somebody who's known they want to be child-free for a long time, I'm excited to pay attention to that.
Yeah, I agree. So I did a little bit of Googling. I'm going to show you some things and you can chime in on whether or not you think I found good data or whether or not it's poppycock.
I'm excited.
So I found that there's like two sort of data groups that people are looking at. One is like the census data, like, adults ages 15 to 44 and whether or not they say they have kids, right? And then the other is survey information where they ask people, like right now we're asking the Gen Zers, like, do you think you want to have kids? And I think that's really interesting because that's like, and they're asking people of all ages, 15 to 44, do you want to have kids? But I think that's interesting because that's like perspective on something that hasn't happened, just different data. And then to make this data even less reliable than it might already be, just because all family data is sort of like, depends on who you ask and who's asking and how you write the question. Not that it's bad data, just that I think survey writers are, it's an art. You're right. You can write the question to get whatever you want. Like you should be segmenting out people in different categories, right? Like people who are trying to have kids and are battling health conditions or they're not cut, like versus people who make the choice. Like there's like categories, right? That would come into research, like why are people making these decisions, right? So this group, like, right? Like that would be like, it'd be interesting to know, like, is it because, life is expensive in the city or is it because you decided when you were five? No way, right? And so this data, some of it came from Michigan State University. It was a 20 years of data about something called the National Survey of Family Growth, which sounds official, but I have no idea if it really is. And they broke it down into a bunch of categories, which I think are fun, which is why I mentioned who it was. Super academic, like academics do stuff like this, right? So it is to child-free versus biologically childless. Socially childless. You might know what the difference between those two. I read them and I was like, I'm not exactly sure. Not yet parents, ambivalent, and then undecided. So I was like, the biologically childless and the socially childless. I was like, I don't know what those are. But people are researching it. People are talking about it. And one of the things I think is really interesting about that, which you talked about, like the social implication, is that there's a point where it's like, well, why does anybody care? Like, why does anybody care about whether or not we're having kids? One of the things when I was looking at the data is I found two ways that they track it with women specifically. One is they're tracking it by births per women. Like, so like back in the 60s, that statistic gives me a little bit of an ick factor, I've got to admit, because it feels like it's like, why does, is there like a quota like that we're supposed to be hitting here? Maybe that's just me. Probably they didn't, maybe they didn't mean it that way. And then the other is that the CDC just does a baby count every year. Like these are live births over the year. That's actually increasing. Like that went up 1% last year. So I think that it's like weird that it's like, so this one is going up, but if you survey the women and look per woman, it's going down, which I think is the one that catches the headlines because it's like once we fell below two, all the economists were like, ah, everybody needs to have more kids. So, yeah. All right. So that's the data. Does that line up with the stuff that you have heard?
Yes, it does. Yeah. I mean, I have so many feelings about it, but yes, that aligns. And I think the childless biologically and childless
Yes.
socially, I'm not a
No, but
astute
you know more than
academic
me. So,
either.
yeah.
But my feeling would be, I mean, biologically meaning unable to physically carry children or create children, and socially perhaps haven't found a partner yet,
Okay.
aren't in a social position to have children.
Oh, that does make sense. I'm glad that you weighed in on that because that does make sense. And then within, so like family construct, right, is this like really complicated topic because there are people who raise children who like didn't have children. And there's a bunch of categories of them as well. People who adopt kids, people who are foster parents, step parents, kinship guardians, all of those things. And they don't fit under the category. And you talk about like, where does it, healthcare, medical care, they have all kinds of specialty things that they're just outside of like the major box. And it's a specialty thing. All right. So after all of that gobbledygook, Research. I do actually have a question here for you. How old were you the first time? This may not be a good question, but do you have a sense of how old you were the first time you can even remember thinking about the grown-up topic of being a grown-up, having a family, any of that stuff?
Yes. Yeah, I think growing up as a traditional little girl in a traditional family in a small town, the construct of mothering is baked into the way we play from an extremely young age. I got baby dolls for Christmas. I was obsessed with Barbie when I got older. And then, you're obsessed with Barbie. And then Barbie has a wedding, and Barbie has a baby, and Barbie has a family. Like, just the idea of motherhood was ubiquitous in what I imagined a grown-up woman to be. And, I was raised by my own mother. She was a person I was spending time with. All my friends, I was with their moms. So I think for a long time, I just felt like, well, that is what it is to grow up. And surely when I grow up, I'll do the same thing. Then time goes on, you grow up a little bit, you become a teenager, and you start to kind of go through this phase of questioning, what do I want my life to look like? And do I want it to look like something that isn't familiar to me? Do I want to move to a big city if I grew up in a small town? Do I wish I lived on a farm if I grew up in an apartment, right? Like, you start to consider that you could do things differently from what you've seen before in your immediate circle. And then we have media and movies and storytelling, and you meet other people, then you go to college, you get more perspectives, and all of those things are just systematically broadening our horizons for what's possible. And something happened to me when I was, I felt like I was seriously dating, even though I was still like in my late teenage years, early 20s. But I felt like, things are kind of coming together and we're getting locked down. And like, I don't know, am I going to get engaged one day? And what would that be like? And it's like all of a sudden motherhood was sort of upon me. And before it was this thing that like maybe one day I'll probably want it because that seems to be what all women want. And then I was like, the idea of it felt just so unnatural. Like, I can't imagine myself doing that. And the nothing about it seemed like in alignment with who I was or what I wanted or how I pictured my future. So when I allowed myself to think, what if I just didn't? Like, what if I just didn't ever have to have a kid? That felt like such a relief. Like, just an opening to this other lifestyle that I had so rarely seen modeled. So that, and then of course, I wanted to follow that instinct and just kind of feel into, well, what would I be giving up? What would it look like if I didn't? And a huge reason why I like talking about this now is because there is so little representation of just witnessing a happy, normal, standard, well-adjusted life without children. So it took me some time between that kind of epiphany moment at, let's say, 21 to being where I am now at 38. A lot of conversation, a lot of internal thinking, a lot of meeting people, reflecting. But that's probably the earliest memory where I felt like just the concept that I might not have to seemed so much more aligned with me than the idea of doing it.
So I love that. We're going to come back to representation in a second because I have some thoughts about questions there. But I want to touch base on the fact that you used Barbie as an example because the history of Barbie is that the person who made it is that it's not a baby doll. Like,
Yeah.
so she actually, so I mean, Barbie's like a whole like Pandora's box of messaging and feminine and all of the whatever, like, and the movie was great. But the story, the way I know it from the Barbie movie, that's where I learned this. So if it's wrong, call me in. Is that the creator was like, listen, let's give girls a toy that is literally not, indoctrinating them to care for a baby. Like, here's your play kitchen, here's your play vacuum cleaner, and here's your play baby doll. Like, so where we go from there. So I thought that was interesting. So when we talk about representation, there's a lot of ways to talk about because it's really important. Like, there's a huge amount of research on all things. It's not just girls and boys, but it's harder to imagine something that you've never existed. Not that people don't do it. People create new stuff all of the time. But it's easier to imagine doing something if you've seen somebody do it. And because every single kid has a parent, we grow up in a bubble where it's very possible to believe that all people have kids because that's all you and all we and all our friends, like, we're surrounded by adults who had, that's how we got there. There's no one around us who didn't do it. And so the very first conversation, you have to be a cycle breaker. Like, if you do this, you're breaking the cycle. So you were a teenager when you began to first think about this yourself. and in a serious relationship, teenage relationship. And it was very clear to you from the start that you were like not, you were not sure or not interested.
Yes. And I do think, well, I love Barbie and I love
I
Barbie
love how we're
still.
all like,
You're
we're like
right.
Barbie.
Yeah, you're
Barbie
right.
fan club.
Yeah, she was invented to kind of show this other side. She was independent, right? In the construct of Barbie as a storyline, she's not married to Ken. Ken is the boyfriend, and Barbie has her own house. It's not Ken's dream house where Barbie sleeps over. It's Barbie's dream house, right? So I think what draws us to that culturally is this idea of possibility. And what you're describing is so critical. Yes, we have innovation and we have people who break the mold and bring literally fresh perspectives we haven't seen or thought of before. Most of us aren't doing that. We're collecting data from the world around us and looking to others in our personal circles or on the screen or through a doll like Barbie, right? Whatever that may be. And it just kind of gives you that little inch of understanding that maybe I could try this, maybe I could go that direction. And my goal is to never convince anybody to be child-free. I feel like, you know, this is a choice. Like, what could possibly be more personal? My goal is for women, for all people really, to understand themselves well enough to make a choice that's right for them. And I think that choice becomes a lot more fair when you see both sides of that decision. We have a lot of examples of what it looks like to be a parent. And I think that's amazing. Like in the world of the internet and community and memberships, more resources for mothers, more resources for dads. Maternity leave, paternal leave, like I think all of that is incredible and we need more of that. I want the same type of thing for child-free people too, just so that when that young person or person of any age is thinking, I don't know what I want, especially if you feel ambivalent about it, it's really hard to even collect the data and understand, well, what would my life look like? What would my job look like? Where would I live? If I don't have 2 bedrooms in my house for a little girl and a little boy, what would I do in my house? If I'm not going to Little League practice on Saturdays, what am I going to do on Saturdays? Right? Like, there's a lot of questions that come up when you really start to consider it. So, I just think having options that are visible to us on all sides of the equation, all family dynamics, and we're just talking about like kids or not kids, right? There's so many ways to build a family. I think the more we show and share that, the more people can find the path that's really right for them.
100%. And so, as you were talking about that, an experience from my own life popped in my head, which is not actually related to kids. But when I was working in an office and I was part of a team, and I think this was a lunchtime conversation, but it's 2 decades ago, so the details are fuzzy. But one of my coworkers was saying how unfair it is that people who were smokers, they got like basically unlimited sort of breaks to go outside and take like free time. But those of us who weren't, we had the, I don't remember what that work, it was like, you know, 15, 2 15-minute breaks or whatever the rules are that it was required. And he was like, it's almost like they're incentivizing us, like we should all take up smoking. And I was like, well, not sure that's the not sure that's the goal there, but it is an interesting thing. So because with maternity and paternity, like so family leave from corporations, it's there's laws and there's regimented breaks and whether or not you get paid and whether or not your life is guaranteed, your job is guaranteed, and all of those things. And it doesn't apply to people who are not in that situation while they're working for the company. So, and there's a bunch of people that doesn't apply to people who are older and are not doing it, people who work there and don't have kids, like at the, it just is not, it's like, it's, you know, and there, I'm not saying it's bad or anything, but it is a situation where there's not 100% unilateral, everybody's got the same situation, which is probably true for everything.
Yeah, I think so. I think I've thought about somebody brought that up to me recently, and they were like, do you think that's unfair? Like, do you feel like you should have gotten 3 months off? To me, nothing looks harder than birthing and raising an infant. So I feel like, you know what? Take the 3 months. Like, at minimum, I think we need that as a national requirement. I own such a small business. I have such a small team outside of this work, and I'm offering maternity leave because I feel like I don't know how you would live without it. So, you know, I consider that. I certainly don't think these people are getting 3 months of vacation and the rest of us aren't. But it's an interesting question. And, you know, I
It
think we
is
can
'cause the
get.
parallel that people are starting to talk about is the caregiver. So like,
Yes.
'cause it's regimented when you're talking about newborn infant, right? But if you have a 3-year-old who gets sick, or a parent who gets sick, or your sibling, your adult sibling has a need or whatever, you don't have those same protections. And it can be overwhelming for people trying to like do the work because like, and that is where you hear people like come up there like this is, I think that generally the thing that's underpinning is that working for somebody in a corporation does not necessarily, it's not necessarily supportive of a lot of the restrict things that we have to do as humans.
Yeah, agreed. I think there's so many details within that, with just workplace culture and how we treat humans through different seasons.
And I would say it has shifted in my lifetime because, like, back in the like 80s and 90s, there was no such work from home. There was no wireless. So I'm not going to say I'm an expert at, like, I'm not going to say I'm an expert on those. Okay, so as you were going through this, is that like, what can you tell us how you felt when you first began to think about this? I'm curious how you felt when you were having this like silent inner conversation with yourself. Did it feel like it was like a great awakening? Like this is really an exciting possibility. Did it feel like, oh, am I different from everybody else if I do that? Do you remember how you, when it was just you, before you told anybody else what was going on, how did you feel about it for yourself?
I felt like it was a huge awakening. I felt like I had come to this idea that other women just hadn't. And I like sort of took it into my hands, especially in my early 20s, to like spread the word that we didn't have to have kids. So I would go to girlfriends and be like, you guys, like good news. If you don't want to have a baby, you just don't have to. And most of my friends would be like, that's insane. Of course I want to have a baby. And that's when I felt like, really? Like, am I the only one who doesn't think this looks like fun? Right. So internally, I felt like, wow, I've really like figured this out at such a young age. I'm ready. I'm excited. I'm going to tell everybody else. Surely they'll feel the same way I do. And the resistance when I would share this with people who I was super close with or people I trusted, and there were accepting conversations as well, but there were a lot of like, nobody could understand that. It was almost offensive that I would say it. A lot of angst around verbalizing it in those early years. And I admit that I took it way too far in like almost championing the idea that like, come to my team, come to my side. I'm not going to do it. You don't have to do it. We could all live this life together, which I think was just immaturity and being naive and lack of self-awareness in those early years. In hindsight, I'm glad because I learned a lot, right, about how deeply rooted our feelings are on this topic, how personal it is, and how we don't necessarily have this discussion within the lens of choice. We are really excited when we hear somebody from our sister to a coworker we barely know, somebody's pregnant, they're having a baby. It's a celebration, right? And it should be. But the conversation of like, do we want to? What are we afraid of? What does it look like? What are my options? That's less socially acceptable, let alone celebrated. So it was that kind of outing myself just in my personal circle that made me realize not everybody's on the same page. And there's a graceful way to discuss this without stepping on toes unintentionally.
So, and that is such an important discussion because as you age up, like, so we all have our, we don't see the world past the end of our nose sometimes, but it's not, I mean, there's so many people who will react to discussions about families in different ways, and you never know what's happening around you. And so, on social media, people are doing like these outrageous, like birth announcements. Mother's Day is this whole thing, Father's Day, all of these celebrations that are built around family. And there are always, in any single group, there are people who have a different perspective. They've decided not to do it. Like they just broke up with their boyfriend and they don't know how they feel about it. Their mother just died. They don't get along with their, a million different things, right? And this bigger conversation about like be sensitive to what you say about this in a like public group situation, I think is a great thing for people to keep in mind. And I say that with the full exposure that if you had talked to me when I was 21 or 22, I was clueless, clueless, did not realize that the person on the other side of the desk could have a completely different, situation than me and not appreciate my enthusiasm for the baby shower down the hall.
Yeah, I share that completely. I was clueless as well. And some of those conversations, like thinking back to things I've said, it still stings, just lack of perspective on other people. But I think it's a balance now between, yes, being sensitive and paying enough attention to the fact that other people have in some cases, wildly different experiences
Yeah.
without changing how you feel. I can recognize that there are women all around the world who desperately want to be mothers and can't for a reason that's outside of their control. It's
Yes.
painful, it's emotional, it's sad. I have empathy for that, and I want those people to have a platform to share their stories as they want to. That doesn't mean I'm not really excited about not
Yeah.
having kids. And that opinion, I think, is equally, that experience is equally valid. So I think it's a fine line between being sensitive without censoring the fact that we feel a certain way about a topic too.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I completely agree. And I think that there's, you know, there's levels of it. There's the unawareness that anybody else could ever even have a contrary opinion. Like, in my teenage years, I had a friend who did not like chocolate. And I remember when she told me, I was like, that's not possible. Everybody likes chocolate. I just didn't, I was just like, this is, you need to try it again, you know? Like, and
Yeah, or you're
then,
lying.
right, how is it? But the truth is, she just doesn't like it. Today, you know, she still doesn't like it. There's that sort of unawareness, tone deafness, like inability to even conceive of another opinion. And then there's the reality that in, you know, put 10 people in a room and they're all going to have a different life experience. Put 10 people in a family and they're all going to have a different experience, you know?
Totally.
And being able to interact with them. And the thing that I think it's hard just in community and in family and in being a human being is the sort of wacky awareness that everybody's desires and choices are actually the most important. Like it's like the, at all at the same time, all at the same time. And I think that that's what shows up here because we do have a social climate that assumes that everybody wants to have kids, which is not true and has never, I think, been true. I don't
Agreed.
think there's any time in humanity where you would go back and be every single person on the planet has decided to have kids. Like, I just don't think that's historically accurate. Do you have any idea? I did look this up. Any idea what the percentage is of people who are child-free, like in the US, like at any given time, now-ish?
No, I don't know the number off the top of my head, but I do know I've interviewed different people on my podcast of a lot of different ages, and some of them have done a lot of research. And I mean, yeah, of course we have documentation
Yeah.
forever from women voicing that they don't want to have kids, they had kids, they wish they wouldn't have had kids, right? Like this isn't, I don't think any of these feelings are new. I think we're talking about them in a different way now, but yeah, I would be curious. I should know those numbers. I'm curious what that looks like.
I think that, yeah, I think it's probably because it is, they do break it down by age. And to be historically, you know, like the conversation has shifted over time because if you were having this conversation in 1969, the issues would be different because the medical options and interventions and, you know, options were different. And so it is, and hopefully they will stay different, just as a slight political nudge, please.
Agreed.
But the, all right, so was, so at this time, you were having this conversation just with yourself. You talked about, you branched out and you were talking to your girlfriends about this. When did it become like more of an outing, like to your family and extended network? Did that happen just right after that? Or when did that become the reality? Did you schedule like a family meeting? Was it a Zoom, pass the potatoes at the Thanksgiving dinner?
Yeah, for some people, I know that is the experience. Like, yeah, I'll speak to my own
Yeah.
experience and then I'll share some of the things I've heard from others in this community because, as you can imagine, with anybody, with any group, there's a wide range of how these experiences happen. For me, like, I don't remember any specific serious conversation where I like told my parents, like, bad news, you guys, no grandkids from me, right? It wasn't like that. I think I'm an outgoing person. I'm an extrovert. I'm a verbal processor. So what I'm feeling is kind of out there. And I think I just started talking about it more when I was talking about it with my friends, and I would talk about it with my family. And there was kind of this era where my world was still pretty small, like graduating college and getting first jobs. And, you know, I think my inner circle was probably like, yeah, this is, you know, she's 21. Like, this is what she says she wants. Who knows
That's what
when
I
she
was,
actually has.
thinking, yeah.
Yeah, like, you know,
Yeah.
she'll change when she gets older, when she has the right partner, when she settles down, whatever. Like I'm sure that there was an internal feeling from some of those people that they don't need to worry about it because it's not going to stick. So it was really like as time went on and I was getting older, which of course is part of this equation for women, whether we like that or not.
Yeah.
Then there was more, like my mom being like, well, wait, like for real though, forever? And have you thought about it from this perspective? And, a little bit more seriousness with the questions. And then when I was dating through my 20s, I felt like it was important that I was forthcoming with that. And there were, of course, dates that never went from one date to two dates because not that I was bringing this up in the first 5 minutes, but if we went there and like, what do you want your life to look like? And I would
Yeah.
say, I don't want to have kids. There were men who were like, oh, well, I definitely do. And that was the end of the conversation. So it just kind of started to expand and then it would come up at work. And, once you start to hit 30, then there's like a lot of questions from
Yeah.
everybody. Like, we talk about this in life. I think we all do this to each other where you're single and everybody's like, when are you gonna get a boyfriend? Then you get a boyfriend
Yes.
and everyone's like, when are you gonna get engaged? And then when's the wedding? And then, okay, now you're married. When are you gonna have a baby? Right? Like, we
Like the
just,
same day, like in the reception, people are like, when are you having kids? It's the
yes.
craziest switch. It's like, hello, I haven't even opened my presents yet.
Yeah. Like, we
Yeah.
just shove each other down the line of life. And I don't know if it's like we don't have anything better to talk about. Like we should look at that, right? Like
Yeah.
why don't we have any other conversation topics? But yeah, it was really in that era of like turning 30, early 30s, where I think people who cared about me kind of started to panic. Like, okay, she's really gonna lose her shot if she hasn't thought this through. So then I had to have more serious conversations like, remember a decade ago how I was talking about this? For me, nothing's changed, right? I've thought it through. I feel sure. I've shared this with potential partners. Then I have a husband now who he was on the same page before he met me, right? So it took some, I don't know if convincing is the right word, but it took some time to, I guess, yeah, convince people that I was steady in this. And I think holding that confidence, conversation after conversation, year after year, allows them to be confident that there's not going to be regrets on my end.
Right.
We can all kind of let this decision lie and talk about something else.
Yeah, no, I think that's, and I think actually you mentioned the dating thing and that you didn't necessarily bring it up on the first topic, but okay, I'm not on any dating profiles because I'm married, but like I've seen my younger friends when they show me, I've seen the little profile things. It is a big thing for people who are my age who are dating whether or not you have kids. Like, so that's like an
Yeah.
open part of the profile. And when my friends, like in my 30s and 40s, people who were dating with people with kids and doing that thing, like that, it's a really important conversation to have. And for people who are secure in their decision, sure about their decision, I think you might as well like lead with it. Like, here I am and I'm not interested in this. I do think that it is. I think that part of this, and tell me if I'm way off base, I think that there is a difference with the way that people receive this message about child-free from men who make this announcement to women who make this announcement. Is that line up with your experience and your perception?
Yes, there are
Okay.
so many less questions and conversations for a man. And I ask my husband about this all the time. Like, how often in a golf outing does somebody bring up kids at all, let
Right.
alone discussing, do we want them, right? Or do
Right.
we have them? I think it's less part of the cultural conversation for men. And I also, I mean, yeah, I'll stop there. I
Yeah.
could go on forever. I think it's rooted in what happens to the kid once it's born and who becomes the primary caretaker
I think,
for
yeah,
them,
it's
which we know is women, but
right.
there's a lot there.
But yeah, I mean, so I would be tempted to say that when we think about men who make this announcement, that people are going to judge them as being, afraid of commitment and so on and so forth. Whereas, like you referenced that you're mom was following up, and I don't know your mom, and I'm sure she's very loving, so I don't want to throw her under the bus. That's not my intention, but to make sure you were sure in your decision, and that you were aware of the very real, like we would, we want to go for gender equity and all of these things, but there is a biological element of this. 100-year-old women are not out there creating new human life yet. So,
Yeah.
and so that is a thing that people do talk about. In my family, the only person who's allowed to ask the kids at this point about that is the 80, she's 88, grandma. She's the only one allowed to ask, and she can be brutal. So she's already on the grandkids. She's like, well, yeah, because they're still teens. And I mean, if you asked me when I was a teenager, I was like, no, that looks horrible. I'm never doing that. So I'm sensitive to that. And then I did actually change my mind, but unrelated. But like she will pressure them and she'll be like, well, you should change your mind. And the more of it's like crazy the amount of pressure that comes from her. It's just like, okay, pass the peas. Let's talk about anything else. So yeah. Did you get anybody who pressured you who really put like a spin on it within the family, like, how could you do this to me?
No, and I'm really grateful for that. I was met with a lot of acceptance, and which I credit to my family, to my parents. My parents listen to my show, which is centered around child-free perspective. They listen to every episode. And there is a real consequence. I think that's another thing that isn't talked about too much. You just mentioned it there with grandkids or, grandmother talking to her grandkids about this. When you're in a family unit, and if you're in a family unit you care about, like I do, yes, it's the fact that I don't have kids. It is the fact that from me, my parents don't have grandkids. If my brother has a child, it won't have first cousins, right? So there is a ripple effect of the choice, which I don't take lightly. I don't think we owe our choices to anybody, including our parents, our siblings, the closest people. But, I care about them and I care about their life experience. And that may have been part of their picture that is now no longer there because of something I'm doing differently. So I'm really grateful for the acceptance I've received, but the more I'm in this community, the more I realize I feel like that's the exception, which is unfortunate. I do think there's a lot of pressure. And I think it comes from that place of everybody kind of picturing their own life. And if there was an expectation that your kids were going to live a certain way or do a certain thing around this choice, and then they kind of pull the rug out from under you and go a different direction, that's jarring to the parents' identity.
It
So it's
is.
not that I'm not sympathetic to that. I think that's all very real, and we can give each other grace in how we all feel about this, but that doesn't mean that we get to shove a choice on somebody that they feel sure they don't want.
So you have just summarized absolutely every parenting book for adolescents and above, because it's this weird thing where, when you have children, like it or not, no matter how much you try to or not, you sort of, make assumptions about what will happen. So I have brown eyes, they'll have brown eyes. I went to college, they'll go to college. Insert I like will they, do the hobbies and sports I do? You run into families where everybody goes to the same college, everybody does the same jobs. Sexual orientation is a big one, like which surprises people. Disabilities, like people who have children who are born surprisingly with Down syndrome or other things, those are big change-ups. But anytime, so much of the parenting struggle can be rooted back into this allowing the individual to be whoever they are and disconnecting yourself from, like, I'm the adult and this is the kid and they get to live their own life. So when you said that, it's like that is, there's thousands of books that all say the same thing about that, because it's hard on both sides. I will say it's hard for you were a young, you were an old, you were a young adult, 20s when you were talking to your parents about this. I mean, it's hard. It's hard at that point. It's just like it's hard to tell your parents that you want to quit violin lessons. It's hard to tell. All of those things are tough, but I think that little element is so much broader than this individual topic. Okay, so you mentioned the ripple effect there. That was in there. What other ripple effects came up when you, or if any, when you decided to go public with this discussion?
I do think voicing that you are child-free gives people this societal permission to tell you what they think of you because of that or what they think about it.
That sounds so
And
fun. I'm kidding. Sounds terrible.
we don't do it in reverse, right? Like if I'm in an Uber, this has happened not long ago. If I'm in an Uber home from the airport, I'm doing everything I can not to have a conversation, but we're having a conversation and they ask, oh, do you have kids? Which is so commonplace. I just say no. That's always my answer. No. Do you mind if I ask why not? And then, I can decide how much energy do I have? How much do I want to share? And I'm really comfortable with this because I've made this choice out of alignment and out of fun. For some people, that question is horribly painful. So I think we should stop asking it. But you never hear, like, do you have kids? Yes. Do you mind if I ask you why? Like, we don't do it that way, right? Even the categories that you mentioned at the beginning, which are interesting and real with the statistics, but the categories of like, okay, so people are having less kids. Are they having less kids because they physically can't? Are they having less kids because they physically can't afford it? Are they, you know, it's like, let's put these into psychographics and groups and like study, like, why? Why are people doing this? And we don't have big studies of parents are like, okay, you all decided to have a baby. Why? Because you think your genes are superior, because you think, you know, like we don't do that in reverse. So, and I'm not.
I want to write that survey. I want to write that survey. Let's get all eugenics here. Did you think that your genes were superior and needed to be? There are people who do have that is actually really, really important. And I learned early on through awkward conversations, I don't ever ask people because it can go very badly if you ask people, do you have kids? And I can't imagine ever asking anybody why not. But maybe I could. People can be horribly insensitive about these things accidentally or sometimes on purpose, because this is a topic that crosses over some really, really strong feelings that align with politics and with faith and with cultural heritage. And so there, it is, it's a, and I'm not going to ask about any of those because this is the wrong show for that. I was actually listening to a business podcast. I was traveling last week, and so I listened to 927 hours of podcasts on the flights. So I don't remember what it was, but it wasn't a family podcast. And the person was talking about whatever they were talking about. It was a woman, and she was presenting this scenario, which was an advertising scenario, branding, and that kind of thing. And she was like, it was an absolute thing that like 30s. Settle down, family, kids. And I was listening to it without even thinking about this interview. And I was like, that is just not even a true reality for anybody. Like, there's individual timelines. And it dovetails right into the fact that you're saying there's an entire segment of humanity, not a small one. I think that like if we were to look how many, I think that there's a very, very large group of people who never get married and never have children. And we just ostracize them and cut them right off when we design things. Like, all of a sudden we're going to talk to all 30-year-old women about family planning. Like, when do you want to start shopping for diapers? So that chafed me. And I think that what you alluded to with the like, why do you want to procreate, is I do think that, and this I would definitely, it's the best survey I would ever write. If anybody wants to do that survey, I totally am volunteering to write the questions. I think that there is underlying bias and a very unfortunate sort of judgment that we're making about people when we ask these questions. And I think that sucks. I'm going to just openly say that. I just think that stinks on all sides, because does it feel to you sometimes like people are saying, no, well, the better team is the team that has the kids?
Yes. I mean, I think in large part in society, that has been the feeling. I run in circles with other child-free people, and I think this happens on both sides, right? I've heard people say very pointedly that the choice not to have children is incredibly selfish. I've heard child-free people say very pointedly the choice to have children is incredibly selfish. So, you know, the takeaway here is we all have a lot of feelings. I think the beauty of where we are in the world, and as you alluded to, I pray that we stay here, is that we have choice. The important thing is figuring it out for yourself, having the courage, the confidence, the self-awareness to make that choice proudly, whatever direction you want to go. And then I hope that we can just sort of equalize as a society. And it's not like, okay, everybody wants to have kids. That is the norm. We don't have to question it. We prize it. We cherish it. We celebrate it. If you're doing something different, confusing, strange, weird, right? I feel like we're getting better. We're still a little bit there. And I don't take offense when people ask me. I've had all types of questions from people who, you know, I literally just met, right? An Uber driver. I've had all kinds of questions. I don't find that offensive. I think it comes from a place of hopefully genuine curiosity, misunderstanding, like maybe this is a lifestyle they've never considered. Maybe they don't know anybody who's child-free by choice, and it's just straight up like, what? Why? Do you want to share more? I think like that's the best of intentions, right? And that's our human nature. When we don't understand something or we've never lived a certain way, we kind of want to know about it. We kind of don't get it. But I think with this topic in particular, treating it that way automatically makes it feel like it's less than, and it's not. It's just a parallel life path. Nothing is better, nothing is worse. It's just a different way to live.
A different way to live. And this, I don't think this is your situation, but we're not like lifelong best friends, so I don't know. But there are women out there who are making this decision for a variety of situations. And one of those is that the biological clock, which we just talked about, that aligns also with the top earning clock. And so there are people who are having very serious thoughts in their own head about, can I do this now or do I have to wait or how does this align? And that's a hard conversation. And the thing is that the more we talk about it and the more people who talk about it, the more that becomes an actual fair conversation and something that people can do. Because I think that there are a lot of people making that decision, or not making the decision, having that conversation with themselves silently and alone because there's no safe space to talk about it. So like I think about you've got professions like doctors and lawyers who they want to work real hard, and it's probably others, engineers, but you also have the very, very forward entertainers who like movie stars and actors who their profession is aligned with what their body looks like, and there's no way for them to live outside of the gaze of the public, right? People are gazing at them and making a decision, and we see it a lot. You talked about people making judgments. Wow, people second guess and judge everything they do. So, you've got very, very public stories like of celebrities who adopt because they want a family and they don't do that. And then people and will choose somebody who's not alive anymore so that it's not like a conversation that people argue with. But like you've got Betty White who like did not have kids and raised her stepkids and was very late in life was open about the fact that that's why she did that.
I think that's an important piece of this. To me, again, just like more conversations begets more knowledge about how people are feeling, why they're doing the things that they're doing. If there are societal boundaries, like I'm not going to be cast in my job anymore if I get pregnant at this point in life, I'm going to lose this opportunity or this earning potential or something like that. I hate to think that at this day and age in society, we have barriers like that that force people into such a permanent decision. Like, if you feel like I cannot possibly take a break from my career right now to have kids, but I really wish I could have kids, that's a big problem that we should figure out how to fix within workplace culture. To me, that's different than feeling like I don't want to have kids. Instead, I'm going to focus on my career, right? It's not a cause and effect. That makes me sad to think that. And I know, I mean, career is sort of a fun run, right? There are all kinds of other reasons with physical trauma. You mentioned able-bodiedness, abuse. We can go into some really dark places. There are a lot of women who don't have kids because they don't want to perpetuate a situation that they
Of
can't get
course.
themselves out of. So there's a wide range here, but that's the stuff that I find to be really heartbreaking. If we strip this back to choice, if you really believe that having a kid is going to cause you to lose something that's precious to you, then that's not really a choice, right? That's like a cause and effect loop that we have to figure out how to fix. So I hope that, women are career women because they want to be career women. And if they want to have a kid in conjunction with that, they're able to figure out how to do it. And I think we as child-free people can support them in that too.
And I think that opening the space up for the conversation is a big piece of that. And I'll give a theoretical example. It's not a real story, it doesn't exist. But when, like, so as somebody who has, it's very famous, it doesn't have to be my own personal story. Sleep is not a thing that happens when you have small humans in your house. Like, you're very, very tired. But if you don't have a scenario in your family, in your community, in your job where you can talk about that with the people around it, for whatever reason, then there's ripples like that. It's like, do you go to work and fake it through that when you're sleep deprived? Does your boss assume that you're sleep deprived? Or that you can't do it. Like, there's two sides of that, right? Like, nobody wants their surgeon to be sleep deprived, but also there are ways that people can run their family and prioritize that and have good, and do that. Not being able to talk about it without risk of shame, judgment, persecution, penalty, that's a problem. That's a problem.
That's a critical thing. A lot of the articles I read, you mentioned at the beginning, this is kind of becoming more of a buzzword in culture, and there's more publications, more research being done around this whole concept of having kids, not having kids. And a lot of the articles I read, it's like the angst between women, between coworkers, between friends, between sisters, where one of them has a baby, one of them doesn't have a baby, and they both constantly assume that the other one
Yes.
is making negative assumptions about their life,
Or the
right?
one who doesn't have kid is always available to show up, to do the babysitting, to do the things, which is not fair.
Yeah,
And
it's
I did
both
that when
sides
that
feel
last question, I
unfair.
was totally talking about it from the point of view of the person who has kids, but like in, it's like, yeah, no, assign this task to this person. They don't have a family. That would be
Yeah.
really unfair. Like that's,
It happens, and that is unfair. That's happened to me in jobs before, where it's like everybody has to be at daycare by 6, but like, Emily, you don't.
Oh,
So like,
right.
can you finish up for the day?
Just work
Right?
forever, Emily. Yeah.
Yeah, like that's frustrating. And yet, I also realize that you do have to be at daycare at 6. And
Yeah.
I don't want you to not spend the evening with your baby either. Like, so some of these things, I feel like it's just, and I don't know the solution, but I
Yeah.
feel like when we witness, like we get mad and we have these disagreements and we feel like, well, this isn't fair and we're comparing to each other and we're jealous because she doesn't have kids or we're jealous because she gets to leave because she does have a kid. Like that shows to me that there's something underlying there. Why can't we all leave at 6? In this
Right.
imaginary scenario, like how do we get there? And then it won't matter what you do when you
Yeah.
get home with that free time. And that, workplace is just one thing, but I don't really think it's the question of like having kids or not having kids that causes division among women. I think it's like the societal circumstances that get put on us in each of those categories that give us angst about each other.
So I agree with that. I actually, you know how crabs in the bucket analogy where the crabs will pull each
Oh,
other
yeah.
down. Okay. So, my thing with that, because they talk about like women will attack each other, like, so in the workforce, like people will like that, and they describe it as crabs in a bucket. But my thing with that is that we humans are not crabs. And the reason the crabs are like pulling each other down is because they're crabs and they don't know. And they're all just trying to get out of the bucket, right? So, it's a bad analogy. But what's missing is the like structure and the ladder. Like if there was a ladder or a path, the crabs would just walk out of the bucket, right? And so within that same thing, it's like I think the reason that within groups people, sort of attack each other and get competitive is that missing framework of this is how we can successfully do this overall. So that's my little theory about that. But I don't have that. I can't offer it to mankind to fix it on this podcast. Okay, so in a second, okay, so one last question and then we'll move into wrap up because I could talk to you all day. Okay, what would you like to know? What would you like people to know through the world and polite society when they are talking to people who are child-free? Like what's like one thing that you wish you could just tell everybody?
Don't ask us why.
Don't ask you
And
why, okay.
we won't ask you why you do have kids if you do. Otherwise, I would say just be normal about it. Like, there's
Don't
not
be
that
weird.
big, don't be weird. There's not that big of a difference. Back to parallel paths, right? We're living life. Maybe there's nuance within our life that looks different, but we don't have to address it. It's
That's
normal.
very cool. That's I think that's actually really, really good advice. As there was a comedian, I think it might have been George Carlin, who was like, do not ask unless you like literally are witnessing the delivery, like never ask, like just never ever ask. Okay. And it's not bad advice, honestly. Okay. So in a second, we're gonna do the final questions. I want to make sure that we share with everybody about what you do and about your show. So you have your own podcast and it is called Curious Life of a Child-Free Woman. So tell us a little bit about that and the links for where people can find that. And you will be in the show notes and in the email that goes to everybody.
I really appreciate your willingness to share. It is a podcast that explores today's most interesting topics from a child-free perspective. So we talk about everything from week to week, menopause, personal style, solo travel, caretaking and aging. I've interviewed death doulas. We have one coming up about party planning. Like the topics really run the gamut. It's things that I think we're interested in learning more about. It's curiosity at its core. But I simply bring a child-free lens to that conversation
Yep.
to highlight the things that are a little bit different for us.
Love it. Curious life of a child-free woman. All right. That is great. Okay. And I'm happy to do that. Are you ready, Emily, for the final three questions? These are just for fun, not about anything of any consequence.
I can't wait.
All right. What is the most impulsive decision you think you've ever made that you are willing to share with total strangers here in the audience?
I've done this multiple times, quit a job with no backup plan or savings of note because I felt it was sucking my soul and doing nothing would be better than going there every day.
So I talked the interview I did before this, the lady talked about rage quitting. Were those rage quits?
One for sure.
That's so
For
funny.
sure. Desperate
That's
and rage-filled.
that, yeah, that's so I love that pair of words that she's used it. And I was like, that's fantastic. All right. If you are sitting in a waiting room for an appointment or a flight or whatever, and you're alone, so you can't talk to other people, like you don't have your own crowd, you could talk to other people. How do you entertain yourself? Do you sit in silent thought and meditation? Do you play a game on your phone? Doom scrolling so with social media, texting friends, or something else?
Work emails. And I hate that answer. I'm glad I feel confronted and convicted. And
That was
maybe
not the
if we,
intention.
I know, maybe if we talk in a year, I'll be like, I just meditate. But for now, I try to be as productive as possible in any moment of downtime.
That is, it's ne if you can interview me every day from now until the end of time, my answer is never going to be meditate. I only meditate like because people tell me it's good for me, and I have to like schedule it and be like, okay, fine,
Oh.
I will under pressure do this. So which means I should do it more. All right,
Same.
we're recording this at the end of 2025. You have a small business, which I know about you, but you're also just a person. Thinking back over the year 2025 and all the things you've bought. Now this can be personal. Can be business, anything, no rules, doesn't matter. What is the best purchase that you've made that you're still happy about? And then what's something you've purchased that was not great and you're sort of, annoyed or ticked off? Best and worst for the year.
Wow. This is such a good question that I really didn't expect. And
As
I
she's
know
trying to
the
come up with an answer.
I know these are intended to be
Do, do, do.
rapid fire. I'm like panicking under pressure. Okay, worst. I've tried to be on this mission against fast fashion for
Okay.
a while now, and I succumbed. It was like a last minute an event, and I was like, oh, I just hate all my dresses. Got something at Zara. I felt horrible about it. It fell apart after one wear. It was itchy all night. Like, just confirmed that I should not be buying fast fashion crap. So I'm recommitted again to my goal to not do that. Best thing I bought. Oh, we got this goes back to my like emails and doom scrolling. We got a new couch. We got a custom
Okay.
couch and I really wanted it for a long time. And, it's like the core of our home. We entertain a lot and it's a couch that fits like 15 people on it at once. So all
Wow.
of my like watching Mad Men, vintage conversation pit, cocktail party, I'm trying to make those dreams come true by way of environment in my living room. And that was a big
Yeah.
step closer.
Love it. Oh my gosh. All right. Custom couch. That is so good. Once upon a time, a long time ago, we were buying a new couch. I have a big family. So, like, we are hard on our furniture. We went to the furniture store and we were shopping for couches. And it was me, my husband, and like a gaggle of the children. Like, it was not alone. And I had picked out this, like, they were finally old enough to be out of the sippy cup age, which is why. And I was like, oh, we could get a couch. And I had picked out this, like, fantastic, like, mid-century caramel colored leather couch. And I was like, so excited. And I turn around, entire family is on this like set, this like wraparound thing with the recliners and the seats and the refrigerator and all the stuff. And they're just so happy. And I was like, I have lost. I have lost. And for like, and we ordered that couch and came home and everybody loved it. And it was like the greatest day of my life when we like moved and I was like, goodbye to that couch. Never wanted it, but everybody loved it. It was like hilarious. They were like, look, it reclines. Look, I have a car. I was like, oh, okay. Anyway, I love the custom couch for you. That's it, Emily Paulson. Thank you so much for being a fantastic guest today on the show.
Thank you for having me, Amy. It's been a joy.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself. Head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adultier adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.